Cairo, Seattle.
This is COVID-19 Seattle. I'm Aaron Granillo, a reporter here at Kiowa Radio. This podcast is produced by Laura Scott. Now, schools are out for the foreseeable future, and the kids, they are stuck at home across the states.
Things were supposed to start back up again on April 27th, but Governor Inslee has said he very well may push past that deadline and extend the school closures through the end of the year.
And this leaves everyone in a very strange state of limbo. So this week, we wanted to focus on how school districts, parents, and teachers are handling the fact that school is out and possibly for the rest of the year. So let's get started. Even though the governor's stay-home order has been extended through May 4th, it is still unclear if Washington schools will reopen by then or stay closed for the rest of the year. For now, they are still operating as if school will return before summer.
We are not working on the assumption that schools will be closed to the fall. We are preparing for the possibility. We've got a ton of scenarios in play, and we are preparing for every one of them.
That's Chris Reichdahl. He's superintendent of public schools for all of Washington State, and he joined the G and Ursula show on Kiowa Radio to explain as best he could what the plan is for now for students and families.
I think we should listen to the doctors and not the political leaders at the state, federal, and local level about their sort of presumptions, assumptions, and hopes about the virus. The virus is going to dictate what happens here. And our race to a vaccine is everything in the science right now. So while they're all figuring out the timing of that, I have to have an education system that acknowledges the possibility that this is with us longer than we think. And what does that look like to give families an opportunity to engage in learning? And that's what we're focused on. And it's just so tough. You all have covered this so well about how many variables and complexities there are. And I just keep going back to my Amazon analogy. Nobody at Amazon is responsible once they deliver that bicycle that's purchased, in Indiana and gets to your desk in 24 hours. The content gets delivered, but no one's responsible for making sure you know how to build the bike, assemble it, know the math concepts. Can you write about it technically and describe what you learned? Can you get on the bike and ride it safely? Do you know the rules of the road? That's teaching and learning. That's why schools are so important. It's more than just saying, here's a bunch of learning material, get after it. It's harder to get an understanding of what students know, how to differentiate that instruction, and then continue to learn. And that's why we're just not turning this thing over overnight. It is a long contemplation. We're going to do our best to climb up that curve of expertise. But everyone should take a deep breath and just know that every school district will be in a different place. We are in this together, and compassion and respect right now is so key instead of urgency and sort of aggression.
So clearly there is a lot to navigate, but Reichdahl has told the districts he oversees to focus on a few key points.
Continuity of basic needs. So we think we're in pretty good shape there, making sure that nutritional services are provided. I definitely focus on our seniors. We have time to catch up over the next couple of years with a lot of students. Our seniors need intensive supports right now from schools to get them their credits and their grad requirements and to get them on to their next step this year. That's why they've been such a priority for us. And then, as you've heard me say, we're ramping up. We're building capacity to be better at distance learning. And I don't mean that to be a proper noun. That doesn't mean every district jumps online and we switch the model. That is totally unrealistic. But every district can do something to create learning opportunities for kids, to put packets in place, to send draft lessons, to give them opportunities to be in their math next chapter and check in on how they're doing. This is not a full-blown teaching model we're moving to online. Again, the best universities in the world don't even do this. But we've got to create more opportunity for learning in case this goes longer. And then as a whole nation, of course, we're in this. And so everyone has this like, oh, my God, my kid's losing ground. 50 million American children are not in school. Hundreds of millions of kids around the world are not in school. So we're not losing ground to the world right now, but we have an opportunity to at least hold where we are and maybe create some additional learning opportunities for kids as this continues. And that's that advanced planning that we're doing all the time.
He says if you can build a structured time at least once a day, even if it's only for 15 minutes, maybe half an hour, that's perfect.
Never doubt how much your kids know. They are really smart and really inquisitive, and there's a skill set about our young people that none of us really had, right? They know how to find content. They know how to find information. they need help on discerning quality and truth and all that, but boy, they are really good and resourceful. So our website has a link to unbelievable resource opportunities by grade and by subject. So you want to focus on your fourth grader in math or science or PE. Our website has the ability for parents to get into that and go, oh, I kind of see where my students should be thinking about their skills at this age.
Reporter Allison Needles at the Tacoma News Tribune spoke to several high school seniors about school closures.
No, this is not like a summer vacation.
That's An Ho, a graduating senior and an ASB officer. He spoke to the News Tribune outside his high school. And spring is a busy time for seniors, full of traditions that students look forward to for years.
At first, it was really hard, but also kind of like surreal because, like, you know, nothing like this ever happened, so I didn't know how to feel. I saw, like, a bunch of my classmates crying, and it's hard because, like, you know, you can take as many, like, college years as you want, but, like, you only have 4 years of high school, and, like, for that last special year to be taken away from you, of course, it's hard.
Says he wants the states or his school district to replace those memories somehow. A graduation ceremony, meanwhile, still hangs in the balance.
If the state or the district at least can help us out with, it's like, I guess, regaining on what we lost, and if we could just, I guess, have those memories back that we can't have, whether it be like prom, assemblies, big jamborees, games, and all that stuff.
This is the first week school districts around the states are required to conduct some kind of remote learning. Washington superintendent sent them a list of guidelines to follow, but the recommendations give room for interpretation, leaving it up to each district to educate how they see fit. Thomas Halverson teaches education policy at the University of Washington. You know, before this remote learning was even required, some districts just simply stopped teaching because they were concerned about inequity. You know, not all students have the same resources, and so learning at home can't possibly be fair. Is there even a way to prevent marginalized communities from falling behind, or is that just a reality we have to accept?
I think that's one of my biggest concerns, Aaron, through this whole thing. Students who were having a hard time being successful in the traditional high school situation and were sort of on the brink of losing contact with school and staying engaged, I think this puts them at an even higher risk. I think those students that were at risk before are going to be at even greater risk now.
And what could those long-term impacts be from this then? I mean, if at-risk students are now even more at risk of falling behind, what are the long-term implications here?
Boy, I'm not sure we know. And it's scary to even try and look down that path. I think we really need to start exploring the potential of thinking about this spring quarter being a time that is a flex time or is a time that we use as an opportunity to check in with students and families and make sure that while we know school's important and we want to make sure that everybody graduates and gets on with their lives, that there is really a situation here that's happening that is unprecedented. And we need to think about people's well-being and safety, and I'm hoping that districts and the state will start exploring deferrals for students or thinking about ways that students can potentially take a gap quarter and manage the crisis that's going on at home and have that not be a penalty for them. In our state, we have about 60% of the students that don't go on to a post-secondary degree. And you can only imagine the sorts of challenge those students are going to face coming into a job market now that is going to be really tricky. So I really think that it's a time for us to start thinking in ways that we probably haven't before about trying to help students manage through this situation and potentially putting academics second to thinking about making sure that they're able to launch successfully when this is over.
How hard is that to rationalize for someone who teaches education policy to put education second?
Well, it's it's mind blowing, Aaron. Honestly, I've been in this game for a very long time, and I can quote, wrote, and verse in terms of theories that would help explain what would happen normally, and none of those are going to be applicable to this situation, I don't think. Schools can be a really wonderful anchoring part of the community, but I just hope that we don't let our expectations of making sure that we meet all of the spring learning objectives, I hope those don't eclipse us really worrying about folks in communities that are struggling and for whom school is important, but maybe not their paramount concern right now. So I think we need to balance those things out.
I wonder if you can provide some insight or perhaps advice for seniors and parents of high school seniors, because they're trying to figure out, let's say, I mean, if they're going to college, especially SATs, AP placement exams, things of that nature, getting accepted into college in the first place. I mean, how are these closures affecting all of that, and how can they navigate these unprecedented times?
Well, hopefully this will be reassuring, and I don't have a crystal ball, Aaron, but I can tell you I've had many conversations in meetings at the University of Washington. This is impacting higher education as well as K through 12, and we're certainly recognizing and appreciating that this is going to be challenging for all of us. And so I think families and students should not panic, should not worry. We're not going to put them in a situation where this is going to jeopardize them so significantly that all the hard work that they put into leading up to this point is going to be thrown away. We'll figure this out. We'll make it through. We'll get people on with their lives. But right now, I think it's important that we focus on not letting those expectations of having things get back to normal so quickly really supersede those concerns we have about making sure that everyone is feeling as safe and comfortable as they can through these trying times. We'll get it together. We'll figure it out. But it's one of those situations where we just don't have a rule book. We just don't have protocols. And then again, I think we need to really emphasize and really think about making sure that we look at the total high school student population and appreciate that there may be a disproportional impact of this on students that were not as well set up to be successful prior to this happening. They're in an even trickier situation now, and we need to make sure that we recognize that all students are going to have to make it successfully through this transition.
That's Thomas Halverson, and he teaches education policy at the University of Washington. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate the insight.
It was my pleasure, and stay well, Aaron.
Yes, you too. A lot of parents have been having to make some difficult decisions these days as they're either homeschooling or trying to go to work and trying to manage it all at the same time. So I want to talk with one of those parents right now. She is Darnisha Weary, and she is an executive director at the Finney Neighborhood Association. She's a community organizer, and she also has two children, and she joins me on the line now. Darnisha, thank you so much for taking a few minutes here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Are you still going? I'm not sure if you're a typical office job or if you're actually out in the neighborhoods. But are you going into the office and then also trying to raise your children at the same time?
I am. I have been going into the office maybe like one or two times a week. My staff has all been remote work, so there's no one in the office but me. So, yeah, I've been going in a couple of days a week. Like this week I had to go in to process payroll because, this is new for us as an organization. So I've had to go in and do things like that. And then just trying to manage now having a kid at home who's in high school that is also missing just the social aspect of high school and life. And just trying to manage that and make sure she's getting her schoolwork done. And then we have a son that's home from Western. He's a basketball player. He's an athlete. And just is having a hard time not being able to just go to a gym and play basketball or just be outside at this point. So it's been definitely a juggling act.
I want to talk a little bit more about your children and, I mean, just their mental health right now. I imagine, not being able to go to school and see your friends. And I mean, you said your son is an athlete. I mean, how are they handling this on a day-to-day basis?
You know, honestly, for this week, we have been intentional about just having family time, which is something that we complain, like we don't never have time to do, but we have, my husband and I have made sure we have meals together and that we're playing games together and that we're just being active with each other to prevent any type of like social isolation in our home with our kids. So the first couple of days, I don't think they really were able to process what was happening around them. And plus they have access to all information because they can go on the internet. They're hearing all the headlines on Twitter. They're hearing and seeing all that. And so this week we actually took phones away from everyone at night, which is something that we, you know, as the kids got older, we had kind of strayed away from because they're like, they're old enough to manage. But it was more important for us now to manage how much information they were receiving because they were having a hard time processing. So we turned off the internet in our home from midnight to 6 a.m. just for that fact, is that I do not want them getting all this scary information constantly because my daughter was having a hard time just trying to grasp what was happening. It's a lot for them.
Your children are, I mean, they're older. I mean, they're, how old is your daughter is what, 16, 17?
She's 16, yes.
Yeah. Yep. And how old is your son?
He's 19.
So, yeah. I mean, these are still, you know, very formative years for them. Are they grasping the enormity of this current situation?
So this week, yes. My son, I think he was just out driving around, wanted to go back to the grocery store and hearing all the headlines. And then, but he went to the store and actually saw like empty shelves. And then my daughter started asking questions about people on the street because they're saying stay at home. And so she started asking about there are people with no homes. And there's also kids at her school who are in violent situations at home. And so they just begin to worry about others. But we raise our kids to always help. And my daughter's having just a hard time figuring out how she can help.
How can they help? What are you telling them to do?
And so she has through social media, which is fantastic. She has a page that she moderates on social media. And that's how she's been able to help her friends is that they've held live chat sessions. They've held conversations. They're having like group sessions where they just talk and hang out. And she did one last night, and the laughter that I heard on that call, it actually uplifted my spirit. So I was like, that's what I want to hear, just a bunch of teenage girls. There's probably like 14 of them on one of these calls, but they were just laughing and being silly.
Are you trying to homeschool your daughter right now?
I tried to homeschool for the first week. This week, I actually stopped because I just felt more of a need to make sure that their mental health, you know, that part of it and the anxiety around all of this. It was more important for me this week to just deal with that, make sure they felt safe. I feel like this is a time where they're actually questioning like the safety of are we safe at home? Are we safe in our neighborhood? And so we did not homeschool this week at all. We just had her read for an hour a day. And we just really focused on just her as a person, as a young adult trying to process this. I would say to all the parents, I know that we're all doing the best that we can, and that's all we can do right now. And I would say just listen to your children. And I really had to hone into my daughter's behavior. I could tell that she was just having a hard time processing it, and that's why we just stopped with the schedules. And I feel like you're going to do what's best for your family, and that's okay. If you're choosing to homeschool, great. If you're not, that's okay. Like, I feel like it's fine. That would be my advice to everyone. I had a hard time choosing not to this week because I'm like, I don't want my daughter to fall behind in school. But I've decided this from now going forward is I'm going to do what's best for our family.
A big frustration in the first few weeks of school closures was that if remote classes did not work for everyone, districts weren't sending materials to anyone. So we called an expert to explain why that happened. Soojin Opark is a professor of early childhood education and family studies at the University of Washington.
Basically, what we have that's working well right now is providing some kind of a hybrid model where it's a combination of relatively short live video check-in meetings with the teacher, and then providing some self-paced work, and then teachers making themselves available to students and families over email, phone, text, or what other methods they might prefer. But the problem is, even this model is subject to inequities and injustices, as existing virtual schools are basically coached homeschooling, as one of my colleagues will put it. And it overwhelmingly relies on a full-time parent or a caregiving adult who's providing instruction, individualized coaching, managing their time and scheduling calls and making sure the Zoom meeting with the teacher is on the calendar and monitoring the progress of their work or paper worksheet packets that they might have received from districts, and you know, also providing IT support and troubleshooting supports and all of that. So it really is a major concern.
We know many parents are still working full-time from home, like Denisha Weary, who you just heard from. Other parents are essential workers, like doctors, grocery store clerks, pharmacists, nurses, or families who are living in temporary housing.
Obviously, when schools are out of session, so much of the quality of learning experiences and developmental opportunities hinge and heavily depend on what families are able to afford. And for many of our families who are working low-wage jobs, who are dealing and experiencing with, you know, issues of survival, right, such as financial hardship, housing instability, food insecurity, or even access to healthcare or finding and arranging alternative childcare, distance learning is the last thing on their mind. I mean, survival is a priority here. So expecting parents to provide coached homeschooling experiences is not really feasible, particularly for parents in marginalized communities.
Now, the district has decided to do what they can, mailing out homework packets and setting up online classes. It's far from perfect, but it is a start. And we decided to put together a couple of stories on how communities throughout Washington State have tried to fill the gap.
Hey, you guys. You have 10 more minutes on a trampoline.
It's the end of recess at a household in Seattle's Rainier Beach neighborhood. Louie and May Presuth try to get their three young boys back to their schoolwork.
No, look at me. Why are you asking, Baba? Remember, Mommy's a teacher now. Look at me.
This is day 4 of homeschool.
Seriously, guys, we've already talked about this. This is a... Listen, you're not listening. This is a very, like, unique time. Okay, things are changing right now, so we just need you guys to help us out, okay?
Like almost every family in Washington, the Presuths have never homeschooled. The Seattle Public School District gave them some online tools, but May says she comes up with a lot of the lessons herself.
I have them doing reading, and then they do comprehension, so they either tell me what they just read or they write it out for me. I graduated with an art degree, so I do some art stuff with them, and then I'm just doing my own history, so we're basically talking about our Asian heritage.
May is Chinese-American, her husband Louis is Lao-American, and because the coronavirus outbreak started in Asia, the Presuths say people have been looking at them differently these days.
Something happened to our oldest already at his school, and everybody was telling him, oh, you're Chinese, so you have corona already. I was at a party, and this gentleman was shaking everybody's hand, hugging everybody. This was about 2.5 weeks ago before everyone went hygiene crazy. And when it came to me, he just put his hands up and was like, well, you just never know.
Most of the families in Rainier Beach are minority. About half of the population there live below the poverty line. Louis Presuth says he helps a lot of low-income kids in the area. His job is a youth and family advocate at Franklin High School.
And I know there's about 50 to 60 students that I work with directly that are kind of homeless or have housing insecurity. And I've served those kids specifically.
What do the kids who are homeless, what are they doing right now?
They're just kind of trying to figure it out. Some of them are sleeping in cars. Some of them are texting me directly asking for food. You know, can you give me an Orca card? So there's basic levels of need like that.
The Seattle Public School District still provides food at more than 25 sites in the city, where about 30% of students qualify for free and reduced lunch. It's at least double that across much of southeast Seattle, so community groups have been stepping in.
You will like chicken. Be on it. You want to say thank you?
Twice a week, while school is out, families can pick up a hot lunch outside the Rainier Beach Community Center.
All right, what do you want to drink, honey? I got water.
They're given away by the group Washington Building Leaders of Change.
Even with, like, the Seattle Public Schools free lunch, we just know that's not enough food.
Laura Wright is the group's co-founder. She says they've partnered with local restaurants to help keep them in business, too.
We're trying to pay, like, full price and even, like, a little bit extra because we know how much our restaurants are struggling right now. You know, we know with, like, community centers closing down, libraries are closed down. Like, our community has really lost a lot of safety nets within, like, 24 hours. So we know folks are in need right now.
The Presuth family showed up for a hot lunch. They say it was a chance to not only relieve some stress at home, but also build community when it's needed most.
We want to see more of that. You know what I mean? Yeah. When I say this all the time, too. It's like when you squeeze an orange, we get orange juice, right? Humans are kind of like that. When we're pressed and squeezed, whatever's in there is going to come out. That's good and the bad.
Sweet
the
or sour.
Ugly and the sweet, which is anger, yelling, screaming, or it could be compassion, gentleness, patience. So we just encourage everyone to lean on the brighter side of it.
Cairo Radio's Rachel Bell.
If you're a parent who's been home with your kids these past couple weeks, you can probably relate to Gig Harbor mom Carrie Ann Ekberg.
It just was overwhelming to think that I was going to have my kids at home with me for 6 weeks because I was not prepared to be their teacher. I wasn't prepared with activities and crafts and things like that. And I thought to myself, I am going to need some serious help to make it through the next 6 weeks.
Here we are, no one else. We walk to school all by ourselves.
Carrie Ann had the idea to start a virtual kids camp to gather up local artists and yoga instructors to teach virtual lessons to kids stuck at home. So she started a Facebook group called Too Cool for School Virtual Kids Camp. And 11 days later, it has nearly 17,000 followers from all around the world.
And then every time that we have somebody coming on to do a virtual class, you can go to the events tab and you will see on a daily basis what the events are, and you can click on them and you can request to be part of that event. And so then you'll get the notification specific for that event.
In the past week, they've had a virtual painting class, yoga, creative play.
A local nonprofit here in Gig Harbor, Harbor Wild Watch, is going to be doing a beach detective virtual. So they're going to go out to a local beach and talk about the tides and the waves and show everybody what some of the cool animals that you can find here on the Pacific Northwest beaches. Saturdays, we're going to have a career highlight. So this Saturday, we're going to have a state trooper couple come on and kids can ask them questions and get to learn a little bit more about what it's like to be a state trooper.
And if you missed the live stream, the activities are recorded and available for you to watch on your own schedule.
A friend of mine, Holly, she has a company called Raising Rookies, and she does outdoor activities and sports agility for kids. She posted a link to 6 or 7 YouTube videos that you can go out and do with your kids. So for example, one of the videos that she had was a video of an obstacle course. So I grabbed my kids. We went into our basement, found everything that we could to make an obstacle course. And then we set up an obstacle course this afternoon.
Right now, Carrie Ann is looking to expand the programming. She's hoping to get someone to do a virtual cooking or baking class, story time, someone to read stories to the kids, and perhaps a science teacher who's at home who'd be willing to do some science experiments.
We are looking for any businesses that have kid-related activities that they would like to come on and do a video or teach a class. We're really looking for folks who have backgrounds in education or who maybe have like a children's museum or have science backgrounds or maybe a really cool career that they would want to come on and just chat with the kids about.
Numbers, letters, learn to spell, nouns and books and show and tell, playtime.
She polled the parents on the Facebook group, and it looks like most have kids 12 and under. So they're focusing on content that appeals to kids from preschool to middle school. And best of all, there's no charge.
We will never charge in this group for classes. No, it is 100% free. That is not the point of this group at all. I want every single person who's struggling or stressed about having a kid at home to be able to access this and be able to use, even if just one of the videos helps or one of the resources helps, you know, I want everybody to have access to this group because we're all in this together.
I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
And Seattle Public Schools has video lessons too.
Hello, fabulous kindergarten and first graders. Welcome back to class. I'm so happy to see so many of you joining us again this week. And for those of you who today is your first day in class, welcome. My name is Miss Brandt, and I'm a kindergarten teacher right here in Seattle at Rising Star Elementary School. Go Firebirds!
It's not just kindergarten either. Seattle Public Schools has video classes for students of all ages. You can find them on YouTube. They're also on public TV, Channel 26.
Are you ready? All right, let's go. For today, you only need two things. A piece of paper, and a pencil or pen.
The lessons are simple. They don't require lots of extra school supplies or materials. Here's our University of Washington expert again, Soojin Opark.
This is not a normal time. So, you know, many parents are struggling and trying to figure out how the screen time factor into all of this, right? Particularly for young children, because we know that it's not developmentally appropriate to have children sit in front of screen time for hours and hours, and that doesn't produce independent learning. But I think there's also a form of guilt that's tied to parents loving their children and wanting to provide the best, but being pulled in so many different directions.
She says that the state and districts need to start looking ahead to how they'll make up for lost time and lost learning. Could be summer school or makeup classes, maybe extended extracurriculars. These are just some options. Now, we know this is an unusual time, and we want to remind you, if you're a parent out there, all you can do is your best. And if you're curious about any of the resources we've mentioned here, from Washington State Field Guides for Parents to Seattle Public Schools TV shows or virtual Facebook Camp for Kids, you can find all of this information and links in our episode description. This has been COVID-19 Seattle. I'm Aaron Granillo. This podcast was produced by Laura Scotts.